listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. And I'm your host today, Dr. Melody Fox, licensed clinical psychologist and marriage family therapist. And every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific Standard Time, we will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. Now, Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, as well as many other topics that help us as parents, educators, and professional support to care and support our youth. And as I'm sure many of you expected to hear Alan Cardoza's voice this morning, and we are reminded with his absence the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. Alan is a licensed private investigator and crisis interventionist. He gets calls and has to respond quickly, and be it locating a runaway, escorting a teen to a specialized program, or retrieving an abducted child. Today he has been called in on a case, and I just spoke to him. He said he's doing everything he can to locate an abducted child now believed to be in South America. And of course, I wish him swift success in rescuing this child and being back with us on the air next Monday. In the meantime, our topic today is promoting resilience in teens. The teens' years are tough for kids and parents alike. Teenagers wrestle with peer pressure, identity issues, and unprecedented stress. Some end up having behavioral or emotional problems or fall into substance abuse and/or abuse. But there are many teens that end up making it through the teen years even stronger than before, despite whatever hardships or obstacles are in their path. These teenagers make good decisions, have good relationships, and excel in life. So what makes some of the teens more resilient in the face of pressure and stress? And that is what we are talking about today. Our guest today is Dr. Dave Verhagen. He is a licensed child and adolescent psychologist and author of co-author of six books, including Parenting the Millennial Generation and Therapy with Young Men. He is a popular speaker and has been quoted numerous times in USA Today, Newsweek, and newspapers around the country. He and his wife, Ellen, have four of their own teenage children, so he probably practices a lot about what he preaches. And that's what I'd like to do, is welcome you, Dr. Verhagen, to our show today.
Well, thank you, Melody. It's great to be here, and thanks for having me.
Well, I think it's really important to understand, you know, what's going on with the teens today. You've done a lot of research, and you're with a counseling center in, is it South Carolina?
It's North Carolina. It's in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's called Southeast Psych, and we've got about 25 therapists that work here. So it's a full-service practice here.
And I did notice, I've been to your website, and you have a phenomenal website that's full of information for both teens and parents alike. I'm working with teens. So before we end the day, I would like for people to know about your website and your blogs and everything that you do to help support both teens and their parents.
Yeah, one of the things we love to do here at the practice is give away psychology. And, you know, obviously we have people coming in paying for service, but we also think that psychology should be as free as possible. So we like to give it away in the form of presentations, in form of, you know, handouts, all kinds of references and materials. So we hopefully have a wealth of information for people that they can get just for no charge.
Yeah, I think that's wonderful, and I wish more people would give away psychology that knows what they're doing and what they are talking about.
Yeah.
And what we wanted to talk today was what makes some teens so resilient in the face of pressure, of stress, and temptation, while others are not.
Right, yeah, it's a huge topic, and just to back up a couple of steps, you know, in psychology, the first wave of psychology was really the old Freudian stuff, looking at unconscious things and psychopathology and all these kinds of, you know, family of origin things. The second wave of psychology was really more in the here and now, more cognitive, behavioral, and that's really great stuff as well. But the most recent wave of psychology has been in, as you know, the kind of broader topic called positive psychology, which is really, instead of looking at what's wrong with people, it really focuses on what's right with people, where their strengths are, when people have good relationships, what makes those relationships tick, when kids do well in the face of adversity, how is it that they did that? And so a lot of this whole topic of resiliency is really rooted in this positive psychology movement, which has been around for the last maybe 15, 20 years, but has really taken off and has been very, very helpful to a lot of people, because it really opens up psychology to not just being someone that has a diagnosable condition, but to anybody who just wants to have a better life. So resiliency is really about looking at how do people stand up well in the face of pressure and hardship and those kind of things. What are the personal qualities that they have that make that happen?
Right, exactly. And I was just curious, because you were saying we talk about the strengths and the positive things as far as a provider and working with insurances or non-insurances. They don't like anything unless it's diagnosable. And I found it very frustrating to get any kind of coverage for somebody who is just looking to for that inner exploration, or the child are building up their self-esteem and resilience and all that. Have you run into any issues with that?
Yeah, it is very frustrating. And one of the things that we've done as a practice is really we've gone off of all of the managed care panels, and we do take some out-of-network benefits, but really have moved away from being driven purely by insurance. Sometimes, you know, you can say, well, this person has an adjustment difficulty or something like that. But really, you're right. It from our kind of work, to be able just to say, let's have a conversation where someone's looking at their strengths, looking at how to build for a better life, how to make things better, you know, kind of almost in a preventative way, is kind of thwarted by the way things are set up right now.
Right, and I like that preventative model of trying to catch it before it turns into some kind of diagnosable pathology that needs to be tried to be reversed or fixed or what have you. I think it's much easier to do the preventive medicine or the preventive things that we need to help protect people from going down that path.
Yeah, I do as well. It's really interesting that you know, in health, in physical health, we definitely have seen the research say over and over again that if we do preventative medicine, it really saves us on in a lot of ways, saves a lot of personal hardship and suffering, and it saves a lot of money. And so I think we'd really be wise in the mental health field to move more and more to that preventative model as well, because we also know that that helps, you know, head off difficult conditions that might be brewing before they really do get to a bad spot.
Right. And in that brewing, we see a lot of teens that are in that brewing stage, and we don't want it to go full blown. How do we help them find that resiliency?
Yeah, you know, when I first was looking at resiliency, I was working for an agency. This is maybe close to 20 years ago, and I worked with really aggressive kids that were violent and did aggressive things. And this was when the whole resiliency movement was just kind of beginning. And we looked at traits that they had personally, and we tracked them out over a year, 2 years, 3 years. And what we found is that there's certain things called risk factors, which are, you know, we've known about risk factors for decades, just, you know, everything from abuse to neglect to substance abuse, you name it. But we've also found that there is an equal number of protective factors, and protective factors are the kind of offsetting side, and they're both internal and external. In other words, a protective factor can be something that is outside of the kid, like having a family that is supportive and is where the communication is good, and it can also be something that is internal to the child, something like a sense of humor or the ability to solve problems well or good social skills or things like that. So really, when you boil it down, to help kids become more resilient, we take a look at, sometimes we can't do anything about the risk factors, but we can do a lot about the protective factors. So we say, all right, this is an area where we can really enhance. Say, for example, it is the ability to have greater empathy. Well, we can work on that with a kid, or have better social skills, or to solve problems better, or whatever it would be. So we really look at building in those protective factors, even if a kid has a ton of risk factors, and in some ways the deck is stacked against them. The more protective factors you add on the other side of it, the more it kind of tips the scale in favor of it's going to be a good outcome for that kid.
Well, how do you build those that sense of empathy or other protective factors? How do you do that with a child?
Right. Well, one is that obviously the earlier you start, the better, and some kids are more responsive to others. But I'll kind of break it down in a couple, and this is something I'm sure we'll talk about over the course of the hour, each of these specifically. But, for example, there's the ability to set and keep realistic personal goals is a protective factor. Well, it has to be both realistic and positive for it to be a good goal. And so a kid that says, you know, I want to play for the NBA or I want to, you know, something that isn't that realistic, it's not so much that you want to knock that down, but you want to begin practicing when a kid is earlier, and even when they're a teenager, setting goals that are reasonable and realistic. And sometimes that can be tied to, for a parent, sometimes that can be tied to objectives of things that they want. Sometimes it can be just tied to building on their own, you know, areas of interest. But that's a goal that you can go after very directly. Another one is called an internal locus of control. And, you know, we talk about, as psychologists, we talk about this all the time. An internal locus of control, locus, not locust the bug, but locus,
thank you
the
for
center,
clarifying
right,
that.
the center of control. If you think about a scale where on one side of the scale are people that think that things just happen to me. In other words, just, you know, bad luck and people picking on me and the coach wasn't fair and all that kind of stuff. That's called an external locus or external center of control.
Where you have no power in that, correct?
Right, where you believe, it's really a belief. Okay. It's a belief that you don't have a sense of control over your life, that things just happen, that you're the victim of circumstances. And then on the other side of the scale is this internal sense where the people that think I make my own luck, you know, you don't wish me good luck because I make my own luck. Okay. And it's interesting with the people on the more internal side, the more they believe that, the better they tend to do, whether or not it's actually true or not, if you follow what I'm saying. In other words, I mean, none of us think that everything is totally within our control, you know, that if we set every goal, we're going to hit it and everything that we want to do is achievable. But it's interesting, the people that believe that if they that they kind of make their own luck, as it were, the more you believe that, the more it tends to predict that somebody's going to do better in their life. And so that is a belief, that is an attitude that can be shaped. It can be shaped in conversation. It can be shaped through life experience. It can be shaped through relationships where it's modeled by other people. And that's a biggie in terms of just building another big protective factor into the life of a kid.
I would imagine, working with a lot of these children and teenagers like you, I've just found sometimes they're really struggling to hold on to that belief that they could have their dream and create it for themselves in spite of parents maybe saying, oh, you're never going to be able to do that, or you can't do that, and this and that, and they get that I can't model, and they struggle with that because part of them knows I could do it if I try hard enough.
Right, right. Yeah, especially for there are some kids that really have that belief that if they set their mind to it, they can do it. And for those kids, you know what? You don't want to discourage that. If there's a kid that really honestly has a strong work ethic and they have the aptitude for it, whether it's for a sport or for a profession or whatever, you know, you want to encourage that. One of the most interesting things, eye-opening things for me, actually came out of the Gallup organization. And they did about 50 years worth of research. And I think they had a database of 2 million people. It was a huge database. And they followed people around these personal strengths. And what they found is that this American notion that we need to be well-rounded is just false. In other words, in our American way of seeing things, we tend to say, okay, well, this is this person's strength. You know, he's really good at, let's say, reading. But he's terrible at math. So we need to really work on the math to get him to be more well-rounded. And what the research from Gallup and from other places say is that the best people aren't well-rounded, they're sharp, meaning they grow more in their strengths than in their weakness. If you think about when people try to grow in an area of weakness, whatever that is, they're only going to make very small incremental steps. It will never be a strength for them. But if they try to grow in their strength, they're going to make exponential strides. And so if someone has a natural inclination towards something, if it makes their brain light up, if they're really passionate about it, then it should be encouraged. And that's, talk about building on resiliency. The more you can build on the strength that your kid has, the more that you can build on those natural inclinations, the better it's going to be.
And it seems like a lot of parents focus on what they're failing in school instead of what they're doing well in and have a passion for, like you said, reading. If they love reading and writing, you know, support that passion, and you can always become successful, hire somebody to do your bookkeeping.
That's right, yeah. I mean, you know, we don't have to be good at everything, and we don't have to be these well-rounded people, but our brains individually really light up around specific things. Some people it's around art, other people it's around music, other people it's around athletics or math or you name it. And the more people recognize that, it's kind of the advice that I give to college students or prospective college students who are thinking about a major. I really say, think about first, not the major that's going to get you a job. Don't think of the safe bet. Think of the thing that you love to learn about, or could love to learn about, even if you don't know much about it. Think about the thing that you have some passion for, and two things are going to happen. One, you're going to do better in school, for sure. And two is you're more likely to actually be employable because not only are your grades better, but you're going to be in your wheelhouse. You know, employers are going to hire you based on personality, based on passion, based on those kind of things. They'll train you for the other things. And so I really encourage people to think about it this way. And for parents, I would say, if you want to help your kid get into his or her wheelhouse, think of these three things. First thing is, what are his or her passions? In what way is he passionate? What lights his brain up? The second is, what is he or she good at? In other words, what are the talents or skills? And the third is, what does he find meaningful or could find purpose from? When those three things intersect, purpose, skills, and passion, when all three of those things line up, then you know you're there.
Well, I'm glad you're talking about that. I know my grandfather used to always tell me that do what you love and the money will come, and if it doesn't, you've had a great life. And
that's right.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. If you have a passion for something, especially when you're young, when you're in high school or college, you haven't learned your craft yet. You're still in the baby steps of learning it. And what gets you to that first job is your enthusiasm, your passion, and quest for success in doing what you love. And that's what sells you to a boss, I think.
That's right. Absolutely. And I don't know about you, but I know I've told some of my clients this, and I mean this sincerely. If someone came to me and said, you can work downtown for the bank and make double your income, and you won't hate your job, but you won't love it, or you can keep the job you have now, but you can only make half of your current income, which would you do? I'd keep my current job. That's the honest truth, is that I love what I do. I love my job. I love seeing people as a psychologist. I love writing. And I would keep it even if I made half the income. The cool thing is, once you're doing what you're good at and what you're passionate about, you don't have to worry about the other part usually. So the income comes as well.
And that's where the belief that it's going to happen comes in. If you believe it, the more you believe it's going to happen, the more likely it's going to come true, because you put your energy and your focus into making that happen.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Now, I know you talk a little bit about Robert Brooks, what he calls charismatic adult. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, you know, I had the privilege of having dinner with Robert Brooks this past year. He's been one of my heroes in the field. He is a guy up at Harvard who has really pioneered resiliency and some of the positive psychology models that we look at. And his premise is that kids need a charismatic adult. And he defines that really as someone, an adult, who really believes in the teenager and stands by him or her throughout any kind of adversity. And it's that ability to have that relationship where you're communicating to that person, to that kid, I believe in you, I know you can do it, and if you hit a rough spot, I'm here for you. When he studies people who are resilient, and he has done this for a long time now, he finds that almost always there's the presence of some charismatic adult in the life of these really resilient kids. You have kids that were in trouble in high school, kids that had a drug problem or behavioral problems, and when they come out on the other side of it and they've done well, when you kind of break it down, what helps these kids is having that person in their life. It could be a parent, it could be a grandparent, it could be a mentor or a coach, but to have that is hugely important.
Oh, I truly believe in that. It's somebody, we're human beings. We need to be connected to other people. And if we feel like we're an entity into ourselves, a lot of times we get stuck and we don't know what to do. But if we have one person that says, you know, hey, you're really good at that, you should really give that a try. Or gosh, you know, I've never seen anybody paint so beautifully. Have you ever thought about doing that? And, you know, having them to guide them or just help point out some of the positive strengths, or as you had mentioned earlier, the protective factors or you know, those realistic things that this kid is really good at, the strength to help push them forward and really think, yeah, I can do that, and gosh, they believe in me, and why don't I believe in me?
That's right. And one of the things too, which I think is important to add to all this, is being that person, being that charismatic adult for a teenager doesn't necessarily mean that you, even though you believe in them, even though you hang in there with them and stand with them, doesn't mean that you bail them out or shield them from consequences of making bad decisions. It means that you stand with them, but it means that sometimes they have to experience the consequences of what they've done. It's part of how we grow up as people, is that we make decisions, and if they're good ones, we reap the benefit, and if they're bad ones, we learn from them. In another interview that I did, the person asked me, do you think there is a big difference between kids and teens now and before, and also the same for parents? And I said, well, the biggest difference with teenagers obviously now is technology. The biggest difference with parents now is there's less willingness to let their kids fail. And I don't mean fail like, you know, in a ditch somewhere. I mean, you know, just fail academically, fail with making a bad decision. There's less willingness to do that, where parents really have kind of a need to step in more. And to be honest, that thwarts a lot of just natural development of a person when they really have to make decisions, and sometimes they're bad ones, and they have to have the consequences. So being a charismatic adult doesn't mean you bail them out. It means that you stand with them, but they have to sometimes face the consequences of what they've done.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was going to be one of my questions, is that what I've seen in my practice, sometimes the parents are trying to protect their child so much, they never get a taste of a natural consequence. Therefore, they never learn how to cope with those feelings of disappointment or whatever the consequence is and work through it so they can become a stronger adult to make better decisions in the future, because they figure, oh, mom and dad will take care of it.
That's right. And I understand that it's coming from a good place. You know, I'm, as you said at the top of the hour, I'm the parent of four teenagers, so I understand that there's kind of this parental instinct to say, I don't want my kids to be, you know, to be hurt or to be in some trouble. But really, to be helpful to kids, one of the best things that we can do as parents is just to say, okay, part of you becoming a young adult is that you're going to step out and make some decisions. Some of those decisions are not going to be good ones, and there will be consequences. And if you get picked up and you have paraphernalia in your car and you get a citation, then we're not going to pay for an attorney, and we're not going to bail you out. You're going to have to deal with that. If you don't study and you get bad grades, then we're not going to own that. We're not going to care about school more than you are. We're going to let you face that. And that's sometimes very tough to do. It's coming from a good place. The cultural message right now, obviously, is that parents need to be very involved with their kids, and I think most are trying to be. But I think we've kind of got to this point where the balance has been tipped in favor of, well, if you're not really dealing with your kids' stuff and managing all that, then you're not a good parent. And I think we maybe have swung a little too far on that side.
Well, I think that's true, though, about the swinging. I always imagine a pendulum. Somehow we swing to one side really far, like not taking any responsibility for our children. Then we're all of a sudden told, oh, you're responsible for everything. If they're truant from school, we're going to fine you. So it swings to the other side of the pendulum instead of coming back. At some point, I imagine it'll come back to the center where there's some more balance, or at least that is my hope for it to come back.
Yeah, mine too. And can I briefly just say, there's this interesting idea. I think there's a book called The Fourth Turning that came out by Howard Strauss. Great book, worth picking up. And they say that generations really come in 20-year waves, and it's like a wheel with, like, quarters. And the first wave of it is that we are tightening up, and then we tighten up too much, and then we start to realize we've tightened up too much, and then we back off, and then we back off too much, and then we have to tighten back up again. In other words, it's this sort of cyclical pattern every 80 or so years where, as a culture, we go through with parenting, with politics, with economic, you name it, where there's sort of this, you know, this cycle of, oh, now we need to back off, now we backed off too much, now we need to tighten up, now we've tightened up too much. And I think we're in that period right now where, from a parenting standpoint, the message is you need to be really, really, really super involved with your kids. You need to take care of everything and help them if they're in trouble. And I think there will be a course correction coming where we realize, okay, we need to get back to a point where kids need to own their school. They need to own their behavior. I think these things have a way of finding their balance.
And I've actually been seeing that shift over the last 10, 15 years, too, especially with the younger kids, where it used to be, I think it was, you know, late 80s, early 90s, it was like, oh, my kid can never fail. Their team can never lose. Everybody wins. Yes, everybody's a great,
exactly,
you know, soccer player or what have you. And I see it starting to go back that, yeah, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and it's just a game, and you're going to survive and go on with your life. Tomorrow will be a new day, and we'll do it again. You know, it's starting to come back that way. At least that's what I see. One of the other things that you've talked about is be a person of moral courage. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, again, that's another, I think, idea from Robert Brooks, but it also is something that I really believe in, is that one of the ways that you can, as a parent, promote resiliency in your child is to really be yourself a person of moral courage. And moral courage is really someone who lives out, a person with moral courage is someone who lives out their values, their principles, in a way that's very evident, especially when things get difficult, so that, you know, kids are observing us all the time, and how we talk about people when they're not around, how we manage our money, what we give our money to or don't give our money to, how we treat people, how we, whether they're family members or employees or you name it, the ability to be consistent and live out very evident values and very evident principles, especially when it's hard to do that, is one of the best things that you can do to help your kid become more resilient, because he or she is going to observe that and pattern after that. So, you know, in addition to being a charismatic adult, along with that comes the need to be a person of really deep moral courage.
And I think that's really important because, you know, our children do learn from their parents. They learn from the environment around them. Some of it's nature, our temperament, et cetera, but our nurturing that we get in our environment of how we see our parents talk to each other or communicate with each other or others, you know, we pick it up. A lot of times when we're adults, we swear we're never going to treat our kids like our parents are treating us, and then yet all of a sudden we're modeling that behavior with our own children. So
that's right, yeah. It's huge.
Yeah, it is huge. And I know parents are aware of it, but I don't think they really fully understand the impact of their own behavior has on their child from a very early age all the way up. And I think you mentioned there's a third way to equip your teen with protective factors. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, and this is the most practical thing that a parent can do. And I'm not really doing this to do a book plug, but I wrote a book called Parenting the Millennial Generation,
great
which
book.
Is a few years old. But in the book, what I did is I took the protective factors that are known by the research, and I just basically said, here are the things that we know help kids, that they tip the scale. Even a kid that has a lot of risk factors, here are the things that we know. And then just broke them out into, okay, here are the protective factors, and here are the things you can do as a parent to promote these things. For parents who want a complete list of that, you can get it for free if you go to southeastpsych.com. You go to my bio under southeastpsych.com, and there's a link called Strategic Parenting, and the list of all the risk factors and all the protective factors are there. And then also some suggestions as well about building on those. But the most practical thing a parent can do to help their kid be more resilient is just to think, okay, let me take a look at these protective factors, and then let me see how I can strategically build these things in over the course of my kid's childhood and adolescence. And it's interesting that the research says that if you tip the scale, the more you tip it in that favor of more protective factors, the better the outcome for a kid tends to be.
And I think that's great. And I do recommend that everybody goes to his website at southeastpsych.com and under the bio of Dr. David Verhagen and click on that. It's a great parenting tool, great links, and actually he's got some fun stuff on there for the teens as well. And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about how resilient teens may have a different mindset than others. So stand by. We'll be right back to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back to Answers for the Family. I'm Dr. Melody Fox, licensed clinical psychologist and family therapist, marriage and family therapist, and sitting in all by myself as Alan Cardoza is off on his duties as a private investigator and a child abduction case in South America. But fortunately, I'm not alone via the phone. We have our guest today, Dr. Dave Verhagen, who is a clinical psychologist and an expert in working with teens and resiliency and their families. So welcome back to the second part of our show. And I mentioned before there, we want to talk a little about, do resilient teens have a different mindset than others? And what are your thoughts on that?
I think the answer is absolutely. If you look at the kids who do well in the face of adversity and you compare them to the kids that don't do well, and when I mean don't do well, I mean, you know, the kids who get into trouble behaviorally or with substance problems or just don't, you know, they fail to thrive and launch, there is a difference in how those kids think. And what the research seems to land on is that there are five or six specific mindsets or specific attitudes that really distinguish a kid who is going to be more resilient from someone who's not. And I'll just kind of tick them off, and we can talk about any of them that we want to. But the first is, kids who are more resilient have the mindset of being open to help and support. In other words, they are people that know that there are times in life when things are hard, and they welcome other people supporting them. So that mindset is huge in terms of just promoting resiliency for kids. The second, which we've already talked about, is that internal sense of control. And owning your problems. In other words, it's not the teacher's fault. It's not the coach's fault. It's not the other kids. It's you own your problem. You own your issue. Kids that have that more internal locus or internal sense of control tend to be more resilient. A third is an awareness and focus on personal strengths. Again, like we were saying earlier in the hour, people that understand their own strengths and they build on them tend to do well. When people really get themselves and they say, you know, I'm good at this thing and I'm not so good at this other thing, I'm going to focus on the thing I'm good at, and they really are aware of it and focus on it, that tends to promote resiliency. A fourth is a desire to contribute positively to society. When you talk to kids who are more resilient, you really have, you come away with a very other-centered perception of them. In other words, they tend to talk about the need to kind of give back, the need to help, the need to kind of contribute in positive ways to other people and to society. The fifth, which is obvious, is the kids that are more resilient have more self-discipline. They have greater self-control, and that's not just a behavioral thing. That's a mindset. That's a way of thinking about yourself. And then the final one that we've kind of found with these resilient kids is the resilient teenagers tend to have a belief that mistakes are really opportunities to grow and learn. In other words, they don't look at mistakes as being some point of humiliation or defeat or something that makes you just feel awful about yourself. They look at them as, okay, this is something I need to correct for. So whether it's sports performance or an academic performance or a relationship issue, when there's been a mistake or a failure, they really frame those in their heads as growth opportunities. And, you know, that's been true. If you think about the biographies of really famous men and women, that seems to come out over and over again, is that many of them have failed. Many of them have made major mistakes, but it's really their attitude toward it that distinguishes them from other people.
That they'll get up and keep going. Along those lines, I was reading along with you as you were reading off those six, and I'm thinking, oh, there's a lot of kids that have some of those traits, but not all of them. And one of the big things I've seen in the schools over the last couple of years is this quotation that it's just automatic without thinking. They're just saying, oh, I'm bad. When they do something wrong or say something wrong or think they did, they just are self-effacing themselves. Oh, I'm bad. And that, even whether or not they truly believe it or not, I think can affect their sense of that the mistake was about them being bad, as opposed to, oh, I did it wrong, I'll just try it again differently next time.
Right, yeah. And what you're hitting on is really a way of framing mistakes in your head. If you think that your mistake is you, then that's a lot different than thinking your mistake is something that you did that you can learn from. And if you think I'm a loser, I'm an idiot, I'm bad, that takes you to a very different place in terms of how you think about yourself, in terms of how you behave, than if you think I made a mistake and I need to correct for it. It's really interesting when people think of themselves in those kind of broad negative labels, like I'm bad, I'm an idiot, I'm a loser, that rather than those things trying to be disproved in the person's mind, that they actually, those things kind of fight for survival. And what I mean is, you know, people who have that view of themselves, they tend to filter their experience and they tend to behave in a way that proves it rather than disproves it. So it really is important to frame it in your head as not just a part of who you are, but a choice that may not have been a good choice, a bad choice, and it was a mistake that you can grow and learn from.
Right, and along with that, I have more questions regarding the mindset, but also along with that, how can parents help maybe change that when if they hear their child say negative self-comments like that, or how can they help to promote a more resilient mindset in their teen?
Well, to your first question, when you start hearing your kid talk about that and they're like, I'm bad or I'm an idiot, I think as a parent, what you want to do is, as much as possible, you want your kid to know that you're going to speak truth to them. Because, you know, it sounds weird. You can certainly, everyone knows you can harm your kid by saying really harsh and negative bad things to them. I mean, we've seen that many, many times in our practices. But you can also, in maybe more subtle ways, kind of harm your kid by being overly flattering or overly effusive with praise that doesn't have the ring of truth of, you know, oh, you're so smart, you're so beautiful, you're so this or that, if it doesn't feel like it's coming from a true place.
Well, and when you say that, I'm interrupting here, but when you say that, all my head goes to is the American Idol when these kids say, well, my mom says I'm the greatest singer, and they sing so off key, but they have such a strong belief in themselves, and then when they're challenged to really do that or told that they really don't sing that well, they get so upset they don't have the coping skills to deal with that because they've been so praised over the years that they're really good at something they really are not.
That's right. You're absolutely right. And that's we're seeing that in reality shows. We're seeing that in our culture a lot. And, you know, good self-esteem, healthy self-esteem, is not to think that you're awesome in every respect. It's really to have an honest view of yourself, is to be able to say, I've got these really good qualities, and then I've got these other qualities that are just eh, and then I've got some others that aren't so great, and to really hold all that stuff together and to be okay with it. Mm-hmm. And to say, I'm going to work on the things that I'm good at. I mean, you know, I'm going to focus on the things I'm good at. And if there are things that I'm not great at or attitudes or patterns that I need to work on, I'll work on them. Mm-hmm. But to really have an honest, healthy view. And so as a parent, to kind of answer that question of how does a parent help with that, when a kid starts talking in really negative ways about themselves, you know, I'm a loser, then to make sure that you're giving honest feedback about them in terms of their strengths and abilities, not in a harsh way, not in a kind of a cold way, but really in a way that just says, you are good at these things. You don't have to be good at everything. Let's focus on the things that you're good at. Let's focus on the things that you're naturally strong at. And to really send the message that you don't have to be good at everything, and you don't have to be awesome in every regard. Because you're right. A lot of these kids, you see it over and over on American Idol and these other shows, the message to them is, or that you can tell that they've gotten, is they've never been given honest feedback about themselves. And you can see the problem with that, right? They're on national television.
And it's unfortunate because it's in front of the whole world, and then
right.
I would imagine the feeling of humiliation or embarrassment or a lot of where the anger comes up because they're being defensive and trying to, you know, protect their own feelings. And, my heart goes out to those kids. I think their parents did a disservice to them by promoting strengths that really weren't strengths for them, but instead of helping them find what their strengths are. So I imagine what you mean about talking openly with your teen and is really finding what they're good at and supporting that.
That's right. And also talking openly with them about those other aspects of a positive mindset. And for example, just early on, as much as you can, discussing the benefits of being open to help and support. This is especially, I work with a lot of young men, and the message that a lot of them have gotten is that, you know, you don't show emotion, and if you've got a problem, you kind of keep it to yourself. And that isn't a mark of a resilient person. A resilient person isn't a cowboy who's going to just suck it up. A resilient person is someone who says, you know, if I've got some need, it's okay to have people support me. If there's an area where I'm weak in, I can have other people help me. So to be able to discuss those kinds of mindsets and to focus on strengths and to really work on those kind of aspects of the mindset that we talked about before. Related to that, it's really important for parents to model these mindsets themselves, you know, to really model that they are themselves open to support, that they own their own behavior and they don't blame other people, that they focus on their own strengths, that they focus on other people and wanting to make a contribution, that they have self-discipline, that they see mistakes as opportunities for growth and so on, and to model those. Mm-hmm. And the final thing I'd add to that of what parents can do to promote this mindset is what I've seen more recently, and particularly this last year or two, I've really focused on this, is I think, first of all, this is a great generation of kids. Let me say that. I think they're terrific by and large. But one of the things that has come out on the negative side is that even though kids have a lot of positive things going on, when they have measures of narcissism, those measures tend to be higher now. Mm-hmm. In other words, kids tend to be a lot more self-focused, self-involved, less empathetic. And I think that's really the downside of having a kind of a child-centered, fairly indulged culture. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, kind of my own take on it. But one of the things that I think parents can do that can help offset that is to really give their kids and encourage them to do opportunities for service, to do, you know, whether it's Habitat for Humanity or volunteer in the soup kitchen during the holidays or do something where they're serving other people. It's really hard to maintain a very kind of self-focused, the world revolves around me, my problems are so big, mindset when you're really in that mode of serving other people. So one of the things, practically speaking, that I'd encourage parents to do is to really give their kids, and you can do this individually or as a family, opportunities to serve other people.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. Whether they go down to the library and just read to kids or go to an old age home and read to people who can't see anymore, just giving something of yourself to somebody else gives you a connection outside yourself that really is empowering, I think.
Yes, absolutely.
We do have a couple listener questions. Actually, one's more of a statement and the other one's a question. So I'll do the statement first. And it says, our church counseling group works with teens, helping them survive their parents during the difficult times such as divorce, depression, other circumstances. It never ceases to amaze me just how strong and wise they become. And I was happy to see that you use the word resilient for them as well as for parents. So that's a comment from one of our listeners, which we appreciate. And the question one is, as a parent who actually made it through the tough teen years, resilience is exactly the word that I've clung to fervently, along with consistency and keeping a sense of humor. And I think parents and teens become so anxious trying to anticipate the next event or reaction that we lose the ability to communicate this. And how does this fit in your methods in working with your families and your teens?
That's great. One of the things I like about that question is the way that it started off and said, as someone who made it through the teen years, and that's a good thing to keep in mind, is that, you know what, a lot of times as parents, we get very, very worked up and very, very anxious. And again, the cultural message for parents now is to be very, very worried and very, very anxious about your kids now. Didn't used to be, but that's how it is now. Mm-hmm. And most kids, to be honest, they make it through and they do well. And I'll tell you over and over again, the advice that I've given parents that they have said later when they catch me, you know, out, they'll come up to me at, you know, a restaurant or something. So I just wanted you to know, the thing that I hear over and over again is the thing that you told me that was most helpful is focus mostly on the relationship. Focus mostly on the relationship, even if you have to choose between achievement and the relationship or behavior in the relationship, focus on the relationship. That doesn't mean you have to be soft. It doesn't mean you have to be, you know, not have limits or consequences. You really should. But really to focus on keeping that relationship warm, keeping that relationship engaged, hanging in when your kid is pushing you away. You know, it's just so often it's easy as a parent to go, oh, forget it. You know, he doesn't want to talk to me. We don't have anything in common. And I would just tell parents that when you're feeling that as much as you can, you hang in there and you stay engaged as much as possible. You keep going to bat. And even if you feel like you're striking out, in the long run, the odds are that it will pay off for you. I'm not going to say it will for everybody and for every situation, but I will tell you that that's one of the best things that you can do is really to focus on keeping that relationship warm and positive and as much as you can, even when you're getting shut out, to try and communicate with your kid.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that communication, and even if the kids are giving you smack talk or whatever, if they know they could come to you when the chips are down, that's a good relationship.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Had that very conversation this morning with a parent, and that's what we said, is one of the most important thing now that they've uncovered some information about him is to make sure that you're telling him that you can have a conversation about this but that is supportive and that you're not going to flip out. You're still going to have limits and boundaries. You're still going to have consequences, but that you're really keeping that relationship as the priority.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. And, you know, we're almost getting ready to wrap things up here, but are there some good resiliency resources for parents that they could go to with or without going to your website?
Yeah, one is, like I said, the website, my book, Parenting the Millennial Generation, Robert Brooks has a couple of good books. One is The Power of Resilience, and another is called Nurturing Resilience in Our Children. All good texts. And just real quick, anybody that has Asperger kid or a relative or someone they know, my colleague Frank Gaskell has a comic book that really builds on resiliency for Asperger kids. It's called Max Gamer. If you go to Max Gamer online, it's great stuff. It's going to be released tomorrow. And it really is resiliency in action for kids with Asperger's. I love it. It's about a Asperger kid who becomes a superhero. So good stuff.
Well, that sounds really great. And once again, please give your website again.
It's southeastpsych.com.
And if anybody has any questions, you could email Dr. Van Hagen directly, or you could email us and we'll forward anything on to you and try to answer whatever questions. So I thank you so much for being with us today, or be with me today. And next week, Ellen Cardoza will be back with us as we continue with Answers for the Family. Have a great week. And as Alan always says, catch someone doing something good. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza.
Alan Cardoza.
Only on LA Talk